Hello, everyone. This is Mike Quincy, Connecting the Light. Before I introduce my guest, can I just say to those of you who normally subscribe to my messages that I've been unable to attend to that side of my work because my computer has been completely down since last Sunday, and at the moment I still haven't got it back, so I'm not quite sure when I can recommence, but I will probably try and set myself the task of next Wednesday, because I do hope to get it back sometime tomorrow. So that will deal with that problem, just in case some of you have been unaware as to what's happened. My guest is Paula Moran. She is an enlightened master teacher, author, and master intuitive. And as the emissary to Sanat Kumara, who is known as the planetary Logos, Ancient of Days, and a Hindu deity, Paula redefines enlightenment and illustrates to us how to liberate our limitation and become free. Finally, she develops a new enlightenment which offers an entirely new level of spirituality. So welcome to the program, Paula.
Well, thank you so much for having me. How are you doing today?
Well, not too bad, all things considered. I'm very fortunate that, as you heard my message there, although my computer is down, which I normally use via Skype to make these connections, which I find them better, of course I can still do this over the handset, so that sort of saved the day, as you might say. Now, what led you to your present work, and how did you actually connect at some stage with Sanat Kumara?
Well, Sanat Kumara came to me, apparently, I don't remember this, at age two, but it has come out in channelings and other information that the Sanat Kumara energy came to me when I was very young. And all through my life, I've always spoken to, like we all have invisible friends when we're children, but I've always spoken to a man. There was always a man present, like a father always talking to me. Of course, that could sound a little weird, but even when I was a child, I talked to this man, and I always felt protected all of my life, no matter what I did. In my, I went to regular high school, and I went to college. I had a regular life until about age 30, and I had always known that age 30, my life would drastically change. And at that point, that's when Sanat Kumara made another appearance in my life. And it was at a channeling event in Los Angeles, and I was doing some channeling, conscious channeling at the time. It was in the early 80s, and I had been sitting at this event doodling, and all of a sudden I felt something sit down next to me on the sofa, like some impression, and I wrote out, "You can now call me Sanat Kumara." And quite frankly, I didn't have a living clue who Sanat Kumara was or what this was all about. And through the next few weeks, the synchronicity of events that occurred to lead me to a woman in Los Angeles who channeled the White Brotherhood was just miraculous. It was just a miracle how this all transpired. And through that exploration, I learned that I had always been connected to the Sanat Kumara energy, and began to channel that energy, but not in a trance channeling, more as a conscious channel. Like I would go a little unconscious, a little bit into a trance, but not where I would lose myself completely, and the Sanat Kumara energy would come through and chat and give discourses. And so that energy has been with me for my entire adult life. And through the years, it's integrated more and more. It's not so separated from me. And now it's pretty much totally integrated. I can't leave it at home, or I can't get separated from it. It's like having, it's like my arm or something. It's always there. Sometimes less, sometimes more, depends if I'm teaching or not, but all the information that I know is from Sanat Kumara, and it's just been an extraordinary journey.
Right, so it clearly would be true to say that he has inspired you in the writing of your books, because the one that we're mainly going to talk about, your latest one, is in fact preceded by at least one earlier one. So has he influenced you in that work?
The work that I do with the Sanat Kumara energy is based from the Yoga Sutras and through Hinduism and Buddhism. Sanat Kumara has been woven through almost every religion in one form or the other. So the Sanat Kumara energy in metaphysics is the planetary logos and the father, or that energy that came from Venus and the father of Earth. From there, in the Bible, it's the Ancient of Days, and then in Hinduism, it's the son of Shiva, which is manifested God, and the brother of the elephant god, Ganesh. And so the work that I do with Sanat Kumara has been about healing the emotional body or healing our mental mind, the belief systems, and our fears, resistances, unworthiness. And that work is what's highlighted in the book, is how can we get beyond or embrace our fears or embrace our limitation to awaken to a new reality. And that's really what I teach, is how to get beyond the illusion, and which is a pretty complex, enlightenment is, for the mental mind, is a very complex theory or concept. It's very complex. Because on one hand, we teach to silence the mind so that there's no thoughts coming in, and to do that, we want to disengage from our fears. But in reality, we're all enlightened already. We just have put a belief system in there that says we're not, or we don't experience it, and that's the big illusion. So it's getting people to release the mind, basically, and getting them into their wholeness, into the aspect of them themselves that believes that they already enlightened. Like, you're already enlightened. Did you know that?
Beg your pardon?
I said, you're already enlightened. Did you know that?
No.
See?
Right. That is a surprise.
There you go.
Okay, fine. Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Now, you mentioned about people's limitations there. Do you think that people are prepared to admit that they've got limitations?
Well, maybe not men, but certainly the women do. We're sometimes men don't like to admit that, and that's fine. But when their lives don't work, there are some men that realize that their lives aren't working, or they can't get that successful job, or they can't make a lot of money, or, they're failing at relationships, then they kind of perk up and see that, maybe it's something within them. But for the most part, women really do want to shift their awareness so that they can have a happier life and easier relationships and easier ways to make money or to find that successful career or be successful in a relationship. So, men do from time to time admit it, but maybe more so in England than the United States, though.
All right. Now, I assume that people can't recognize their limitations unless they know what the goal is. So when you run your workshops or et cetera, how do you get people to understand what it is you're looking for, and what are they going to achieve once they've found their limitations and perhaps overcome them?
Well, I speak of limitations as fears, resistances, unworthiness, denial, addiction, anger. We all experience those aspects of ourselves from one place or another. And we're taught, mostly in the Western world, to say that they're negative, or we want to push them away. We want to push the fear away, or we want to push the confusion away. But in the work that I do, it's not about pushing that energy away. It's about embracing that energy, because they are all aspects of ourselves. You know, the Dalai Lama wrote a book on anger, so he must experience anger. And in a lot of metaphysical traditions, they teach people not to have anger. But I encourage people to be in touch with their limitation, with their anger, with their fears, with their confusion, their denial, their unworthiness. Because as we, you know, God says, you know, God loves all parts of us. Why can't we love all parts of ourselves instead of trying to push it away? So I've developed a product line called Sovereign Light, and I use that product line to help me get to the core of people in addition to my intuition. Through that Sanat Kumara energy, I'm very intuitive, and I can actually see in the unconscious. I can see people's limitation or experience their limitation and getting to the source of their, you know, disturbances or their unhappiness or their sadness or the illness in the physical body. You know, the illness, stress, or a more complex illness in the physical body is a manifestation of some out-of-balance pattern or belief in the emotional body and in the belief system. So we use that product line. I use meditation, creative visualization. So I get people to be in touch with that energy and not to separate out into the negative and the positive, because as that again creates another separation, which is what we're trying to heal. We're trying to come into that wholeness rather than keep separating out by calling it negative or by even saying that there are dark forces after a person or negative energies attached to a person makes a person feel like they're not worthy or that they're bad in some way. And the teachings with Sanat Kumara are to enlighten an individual and to appreciate all the aspects of the person. So I teach people how to embrace their fears and their denials and their resistances so that we can love the whole picture. God loves us all. Why can't we love ourselves?
Yes. So I can see now why you refer to creating a healthy body, but when people hold their fears, are you talking more about fears about themselves or about fears they carry about things outside of them, or both?
Well, both. There's really no fear outside of us. I mean, there's some healthy fear, you know, like if you were driving your car and you're coming close to a cliff and all of a sudden you get this, you know, gripping in your solar plexus, that's a healthy fear. You know, like you're tuned in to where you are and your boundaries, and that's a healthy fear. But most people are afraid of things that they don't either know or from past experiences. And so we hold those past experiences in a manner that is killing us, basically, fearing us and killing us. And we contract our solar plexus. We hold on to those muscles in the solar plexus because there, in the United States, there are so many digestive issues and, you know, Crohn's disease and digestive failure that, you know, people aren't digesting their lives. They're so contracted that they're constipated. It's a huge issue here. So that's because we hold our fear in our third chakra, and we're constantly in that tension state, that flight or flee mechanism, which doesn't help us be, you know, happy and peaceful with our own lives.
Right. Yeah, I think when I was referring to fears outside of themselves, I had more in mind, say, fear about their job, or simply fear about their future or their family's future, rather than something that was strictly personal.
Okay. Yeah, fear, well, it has to be personal. I mean, fear about your job is personal, right?
Yeah.
You know, it has to start
from you.
Maybe
don't have quite the same control, perhaps, over the future, say, of your job, whereas one would hope that where you are personally concerned, it really is down to you.
Correct. You create
okay,
your job.
Fine.
You're very good. See, you're enlightened. See,
you
create everything in your life. Your external world is just a manifestation of what's going on inside of you.
Yeah.
So if we want world peace, we have to come to peace with ourselves. We can't fix anything in the outer world without fixing the inner world. And that, too, is healing the separation between the inner or the feminine and the outer, the masculine. So it's that
I agree with you on that. Now, you also talk about awakening, as you express it, to your truth. Now, you haven't said awaken to the truth, so are you suggesting now that people can hold different levels of truth, but as long as it's theirs and they live by it, that would be the answer?
Yes, there isn't one universal truth that we all aspire to, because every soul is in a different journey. So you might choose, for instance, you might choose not that you don't want enlightenment in this lifetime. The thing you want to be is completely free, just free to live your own life. And my goal in this lifetime is to be enlightened. So I have my own soul journey, and I am in touch with my soul journey. Let's say you are in touch with your soul journey, and it's just to be completely free. So your truth is going to be definitely different than my truth. So my truth is just that total enlightenment. Once I get there, I don't really care about anything else. And then yours is just to be, you know, happy and free, happy-go-lucky. Your truth is very different because of your soul's growth and needs in this particular lifetime. So there's not one stance on truth. There's not the truth. It's your truth, which is very different than, you know, your friend's truth or your mother's truth or your father's truth. But I don't also want to say, I also want to say to that is that a lot of people say, well, this is who I am and this is my truth. That's usually coming out of personality. Ego personality likes to latch on to that idea. And most people are not living their truth in this lifetime.
Right. Now, again, when you speak of truth, does that also include their spiritual understanding, or are you talking of a more general understanding of the purpose of life?
Well, I look at that as being exactly the same. Your life journey is your spiritual journey. You know, it has to be one. Otherwise, again, you're creating a separation. They can't be different. People often say it's my spiritual journey, but in life I'm, you know, a rocket scientist. Well, those two things have to weave together. You have to bring the spirituality into rocket science and vice versa. But it doesn't mean that you have to, you know, be a preacher at the job as a rocket scientist. But the two of them are intertwined. It is one path. There is just one path to your truth. Yours.
Fine. Now, in the new enlightenment, you talk about transcending the ego. Do people readily accept that they have an ego and that sometimes it can, so to say, get in the way?
I think that everybody knows that they have an ego. If you didn't have an ego, you wouldn't know how to brush your teeth. So the ego does give us direction. You know, we wouldn't know how to get out of bed. It does help us in those individual tasks. But what that ego, we don't want to inflate our ego. So the ego has a tendency of wanting to control everything in our lives. This is what you're going to know, or this is how you're going to live. You know, that's the ego that we want to unhook, or we want to subside. I say in my classes that, you know, there's nothing more powerful than you in your life. But I'm not talking about the ego self. I don't think that I am grander than you. I don't feel like I'm better than you. We're all here together. So if a person can stay in their own power, they are the most important thing in their life, then they can live from a different perspective. They'll stop giving their power away to everyone who comes along and feel more intact, or feel more adequate and worthy of their own life. So the spirituality in all of this, which is woven through the Yoga Sutras, is about knowing that inner self. So the more we have a deeper relationship with that inner self, the more deeper our meditations go, the more enlightened we become, the more expanded we become, because we're not so interested, we don't fear it, and then we don't get triggered by the outer world, and there's no defense mechanisms that are in there, and we simply allow life to flow with us from whatever idea or concept that we have. And when we're in touch with our inner truth, the truth of ourselves, then we live life from a totally different perspective. We don't need the definitions of the outer world. We don't need labels from the outer world. We simply are doing our own individual dance of compassion and worthiness and love and giving and appreciation, which is our birthright to live that way.
Right. So when you talk of the inner self, would that by any other name be called our higher or our God self?
Yes, absolutely.
Right.
Yes, it is.
We do get these different sort of bits of terminology all tending to mean the same thing. Right, so you also talk about in your new book about locating blocks and releasing them. So how do people recognize where they have blocks?
I think that most people can feel that there is a block somewhere in their life. It could be a physical issue like chronic allergies, chronic digestive issues. It can be more serious illness like diabetes or lung issues, breathing issues, or things like that. Or they can feel it, like things aren't working for them. You know, like they can't find that mate. You know, they can't find a spouse, or they can't find a relationship. Or the job is not satisfying to them anymore. You know, something used to be a lot of fun to go to, they now hate to go to their job. So there's an emotional block there, or there's a physical block in their life. Maybe they chose a partner who's abusive, and they know that that's not working for them. So I really think that people are aware that there is something amiss in their life. They may not be able to identify it, but I really feel like they are, or maybe I'm hoping that they're conscious enough to know that there is something that's not right in their life.
Right. So where you talk about providing advanced solutions to liberate old beliefs, clearly you have to first identify the old beliefs. Tell us a little bit about how you approach that.
Yes, it's really helpful to, well, I believe that you have to be, in order to shift the energy, you have to be conscious that you're in the pattern. So next time if someone's in a pattern, they have to recognize that they're in that pattern. And the physical body has to participate in the release of that energy. So it can't just be a concept or a thought. Like I can't say to you right now, okay, release all your fear. Okay, right now, just release all your fear. You would think, you know, what do you mean, release all my fear? I don't have any fear. But you might drive out of your location in a few hours and then experience some fear. It has to be a visceral experience. You have to be able to feel it in the body. It can't just be a theory, okay? So as soon as you find that you're in a pattern of fear, like you think about your job tomorrow and you think about a lot of fear, all of a sudden your gut wrenches and it clamps down. Okay, in that moment, you have to stay in that moment and shift into a more positive idea. So the job is, maybe the job is ending next Monday. And instead of focusing on the ending piece, look at it as a freedom to create something that you really want to do. So instead of looking at it as a negative, look at the positive. It's giving you a new opportunity to make change in your life. And so as soon as you feel that visceral to breathe into that contraction or into that heaviness in the solar plexus area, breathe, because when we create patterns, we hold our breath. So you want to breathe into that area and then think of a positive. Think of something different than the negative, and it will shift the pattern. Now, more rooted patterns, things that are more rooted in a person's life, may take a couple times, but for the most part, most of that energy should release within that moment. And so what it does, changing the pattern, is about staying more conscious of our lives, what we're creating or what we're not creating. And so it helps us get to the basis of where we are in our own lives and what we want and what we're creating. You know, the law of attraction, which has been big in the last 10 or 15 years, is about what's at our core, what really is laying down in our core, not so much the things we think about, but what's really buried underneath all those other layers. And so a lot of people say, well, you know, I keep saying positive affirmations. I keep saying that I'm worthy of this, or I'm beneficial in my life, but I keep attracting all this negativity in my life. I have all these friends that are negative, and I don't feel good in my digestion. It's because we have to look at our core, what's buried underneath everything, so that we can get to the issues, really the issues at hand, so that we start attracting all that positive in our life. So just by that simple method of identifying that you're in the pattern, breathing through it, releasing the contraction in your solar plexus will move a tremendous amount of energy.
Right. So now you talk about what people are creating. With that, clearly must come some degree of responsibility for what you are creating. So how do you approach that sort of question of responsibility?
Yes, everybody is responsible for themselves, right? The only person you can change is you. So, yes, it's a responsibility. Your own happiness, your own wellness is your responsibility. It is your soul's journey, your responsibility. So if you want a happier existence, it's your responsibility to make that change. Nobody can do it for you. I can guide you, but I can't really reach my hand into your solar plexus and unwind that contraction that's in there. But I can guide you to show you how to do it, but the ultimate responsibility is yours to make those changes. There is no golden wand coming, unfortunately. I mean, there are people who hold a tremendous amount of energy, and people have been healed in my presence, but it's not done through personality. It's all done through spirit. It's not decided, okay, you. And that's the same thing with other people who hold incredible energy, miraculous energy. It's not done through personality. So if a person heals, it's because of the soul's decision, which is that inner spirit, that inner wisdom, that truth that lies within us, our higher self or our true self.
Right. Now, I notice that you talk of being an expert at reading energy. Can you explain what you mean by that, or how you do it?
That's a good question, how I do it. I have a gift, and I attribute that to the Sanat Kumara energy. I have a gift to being able to read people's unconscious patterns. So my mind is silent all the time. I don't have a looping of dialogue that goes on in my mind. But when I look through my mind, or through my third eye into my mind, it's vast. It's like double soccer fields. It just goes forever and ever and ever. And through that clarity, or when I'm in a room with somebody, or if I hear your voice, I can tune into your own energy, and I get a lot of data or information about a person. I'm doing a new healing system called Body of Light, and through Body of Light, which is also a private session, I go into the unconscious field, into this grid that's in the mind and in the soul, and I can access all of your issues that are unresolved in this lifetime. I could actually see your original pattern, why you came originally onto the planet. I didn't take any training for this. I haven't taken a class. I don't know how I know this. I don't remember ever really hitting my head or anything, getting clonked over the head to be able to do this. It just has been there for me most of my adult life. And it keeps growing, and it that's what I call reading people's energy, is reading their their inner self, or their, it's intuitive. It's profoundly intuitive. And the data that I get is nobody can know. Nobody knows this stuff. I don't want to fear anybody. I mean, anybody listening to this, I don't want to fear you. It's not a bad thing. I don't see bad things. I only see the things that need to be cleared. And I don't judge the experience either. To me, it's just simply energy, and we want to clear that energy to clear the field so that everyone lives peacefully and calmly and enlightened. So it's not like I'm looking inside of someone and saying, oh, my God, what's going on here? It's not my MO at all. But it is very fascinating. Today I had a client, and she had a deficiency. She came for some pain in one of her discs. And what I was taken into was the biology, the makeup of her bones, and I was able to see that she had a calcium deficiency in her bones from an inability to uptake the calcium from her digestive tract. So it's extraordinary work. I actually got this in 1993, a few years ago, and the work is just miraculous. It's just an incredible fascination of, it's like a science movie. It's like streaming through the nerves and the veins and in the tissue. And then I also work in the unconscious, and that field of the unconscious is enormous. And so I tap into past lives, I tap into future lives, this life, and start moving patterns, unhooking people, releasing attachments, and getting people to be in their truth. And a lot of people do come to me with that request, is that they want to be in their inner truth. And it's just an amazing experience.
Yes, well, that certainly is a wonderful gift. Presumably, with your understanding there, do you also believe that people come into life with certain what may be called karmic responsibilities? I mean, can you connect with that?
Absolutely. I do work in a lot of karma. Sometimes the karma is up, you know, it's done. And sometimes people hold on to their karma too long because it becomes familiar to them, you know, like our patterns. How we live our lives is a familiar pattern. And it might not work for us, but it's familiar. And so we're humans are reluctant to give up something that's familiar. And so karma, sometimes the karma's up, you know, but they keep going back to the same situation because it's so familiar. So in those situations, I can help them release some of that karma. But I don't, I can't go into an Akashic record and shift the record. I wish I could sometimes, but I can't go and do that. But I can see, I could read your Akashic records or a person's Akashic records, and I could see future life. I could see a virus vibrating in a cell. That's how precise my intuition is. It's extraordinary. And it's fun. I think it's fun.
Amazing. I guess if you weren't doing what you are now, you could well have become a healer.
Oh, I do healing work. Yes, absolutely. I have done a lot of healing work in my life.
Oh, and,
yes. And the session that I just talked about, Body of Light, as a private session, is a healing session. And I used to do a lot of medical intuitive work, and now not so much. As a standalone session, but I do work in that new session called Body of Light, which is just phenomenal. The changes, the instantaneous changes that have happened in people's life is just amazing. So it's nice to see people. It's nice to see people enlightened, and it's nice to see people happy.
Oh yes, yes, of course. Now, I'm reading here that you created the Sovereign Light System of Emotional Healing. Is that something you use today and use in your workshops?
I do. That system was given to me by Sanat Kumara in 1994, and it's made out of gemstones. The elixirs are made out of gemstones, but not singular gemstones, a pattern layout of gemstones. And each elixir in the series, there are four series, and each elixir, each elixir has its own set of gemstones or crystals that create a pattern. And in that, each elixir addresses an emotion or a belief that we either want to enhance or we want to release. So there's the core series, which is I believe I am worthy and I am loved. And then there's the release series that releases anger, fear, confusion, denial, resistance, emotional addiction. And then there's an integration series, which works on some archetypal patterns, healing the feminine, healing the masculine, surrender, sacred union, forgiveness, and open to receive. And then I have a mastery level one, which is I am that I am, Sanat Kumara mastery, divine mother, and nirvana. So all those elixirs work to repattern the self in some way, the inner self. And then that product line is used in workshops, and it's just an amazing experience that I have people pick elixirs without looking at the label, and inevitably it's exactly what they're working on. So it's a fun process.
Right. Now, you have an earlier book called Codes of Light, The Power of Our Beliefs. Is that something else that you incorporate into your present work? I mean, is it reflected in your new book as well?
A little bit, yes. And Codes of Light is really describes the product line. And I started out at the very beginning about my relationship with Sanat Kumara and the healing work that I do in Body of Light. And so that, and then the product line, Sovereign Light, it really highlights why it's important to release our fears and to why it's important to believe that we're worthy of love, and to get into that inner, how we can get into our higher self. Because a lot of people don't believe in their higher self, or they don't trust that inner wisdom, or they don't trust their intuition. And so it helps us get to that place of being able to trust our own self and our intuition, and release whatever we are working on in this lifetime. Yes.
Right, and I see you've been quite busy in the past. You also have your guided meditation, Purify the Body Temple. You might tell our listeners a little bit about that. I assume it's still available.
Yes, it's available. It's an incredible process. It's a Sufi method of unwinding our chakras. It works through all the chakra systems, 1 through 7 in the body, and then the 4 on top of the head that go connect us with the more divine energy, the 12 chakra system, and it unwinds. I narrate the whole thing, so it unwinds the chakras. So we ask for our fears or our discontent or our lack or judgment or whatever it is that we're dealing with to come into this golden energy, and it gets transformed by spinning the energy, and then we connect with our higher self, and that higher self is poured into the physical body. It's a beautiful process. It takes about an hour to complete. It's available on my website as an MP3 or a CD. And I just released last week a new CD called Awaken, A Divine Relationship, another guided meditation connecting us with our true self or our higher self through our inner child, because I believe that the inner child is the closest, our small child is the closest to our divinity, and then we start to separate out from that awareness until we get into adulthood, where we are the most separated. And so by connecting with that inner child, we connect with our divinity, and it's a very powerful experience. And so it's available. It should be available in the next week on the website, but that's available too.
Do you actually do the meditation yourself, and does it include music as well?
Yes, absolutely. Both of them have music to them, beautiful music that is very soothing. A lot of people say they fall asleep to purify the body temple. The voice is very soothing, and the music, and I guide you through the whole process. So you're listening to my voice through that whole experience.
That's very useful.
Yes.
Right.
It's hard.
I read that you recently led a group to Yucatan to activate the planetary grid and the frequencies of the Dove Consciousness, which is connected with Sanat Kumara. That seems to be another side to your abilities. Can you explain to people what actually activating the planetary grid means?
Well, it actually, my work on the planetary grid actually started in 1995 in England when I was guided to the Michael and Mary lines off your, I guess that's the West Coast there, and it's led me all around the world to repair and activate the planetary grid. So around the whole planet is a grid system that we connect into, which I see around the physical body, our personal grids, that connect with the planetary grid and then the cosmic grid that goes into the universe, into the solar system, and then our universe. So we're connected to the universal energies all the time. And so it actually began in England in 95. I came and spent a couple months there. It was extraordinary process to Stonehenge and all your beautiful sites in Avebury and Land's End, and it was just an extraordinary time. And I'm actually coming back to England in November. I'll be there for a week in London. Well, in Birmingham, I have an event in Birmingham on Monday, November 28th. And then the rest of the week, I'll be in London teaching. And then I'm doing a workshop called The New Enlightenment on December 4th in London at Neil's Yard, at Covent Garden in Neil's Yard. Are you in London?
No, I'm outside of London, nearer to the south coast.
So what part is that Kent or is that Brighton?
Yes, that's right. I suppose you would actually say just about mid-Kent, yes.
Oh, that's nice. I have a friend that has a gallery in Tunbridge Wells, Kent.
Oh, yes, yes.
Yes.
Yeah, that's not too far away. The nearest place that people would be familiar with to where I am in Ashford is probably Canterbury.
Oh, yes, nice. Yeah, that's candy. Don't you have the candy, Canterbury candy?
Sorry?
Don't you have the chocolate, Canterbury chocolate?
You mean ley lines?
No, candy, chocolate. Isn't Canterbury,
chocolate,
England, noted for their chocolate?
No.
No? Oh, all right. See, there's a woman talking about chocolate.
I was going to ask you about chakras and auras. You were speaking about your guided meditation and referred to those. I wondered if you could actually see them.
You know, I don't see auras. Of all the energy that I can read, I rarely see auras or chakras. Sometimes I will get a blip of color will come into my awareness. Like if somebody has a bad infection or something, I'll see that yellow color. But most times, sometimes I'll get like a purple flash or a real high brilliant blue flash. But for the most part, I don't see colors. I don't see chakras. Unless something is really amiss in somebody, there's a lot of congestion, then something will come up there. But I'll get a feeling before I see anything. And I see mostly with my third eye, not so much with my physical eyes, but mostly with my third eye. And I can't read a tarot card for the life of me. I mean, I have like seven decks, and I I still can't. I think it's too linear for me. I'm more into the feeling body. So yes. If I could feel energy all around me, you know, miles and miles around me, but I can't, if you put a tarot card in front of me, I just am like lost, totally lost.
Right.
But it is now, it is funny how we read energy. Oh, sorry.
Right. Now, there was a part in your book where you mentioned about the inner you, which is your true self, and went on to say it is where relationship is formed and where unconditional love resides. Now, I would guess that that is the ultimate goal, is to be able to live your life and express it with unconditional love. Would you say that was a very difficult goal to reach?
For me, no. Well, it just depends on what you call difficult. It did take some time to understand that. It takes time. What I teach with unconditional love is not to make a judgment about the life. So the life becomes a neutral. So God is neutral. So your life or your experiences are neutral. It doesn't matter. It's like you're on a soul train. The train is your soul, and it's taking you on a journey. And your responsibility is to enjoy the journey. So when we get out of the judgment piece, we can then love unconditionally, because it is the peace, judgment is the peace that keeps us locked into the all the little pieces that this isn't good enough, or that's not good enough, or it's not perfect enough, it's not right enough, he's the wrong size, she's the wrong color. We go through this whole litany of judgment about things in our lives. So when we love, when a person really embodies unconditional love, they're really sitting in that place of neutrality in their life, being neutral of their experiences and enjoying that flow of energy. So it doesn't matter. Nothing should matter to us. God doesn't look at it as being bad or good. You know, God doesn't judge us, doesn't say, well, you're not, you know, like, you're not doing such a great job, or Paula, you're not doing such a great job. It just is an experience,
yeah.
Right? So the soul takes us on a journey, and here we are just being able to ride with the wave of our soul and enjoying the landscape. It's like being on a train and enjoying the landscape of what our creation is in this lifetime. It's beautiful.
Yeah. I would imagine that since our lives are somewhat conditioned right from the time we're young with our family, our peers and whatever, that we would tend to automatically, say, for example, judge people. We gossip about them. We might accuse them of things, whereas I would like to think that if we've reached that level of being able to see everybody with unconditional love, we would not be doing those type of things. And that's why I suspect it must be very hard for some people to change their attitude, if you like to call it that.
Yes. It takes practice. You know, it takes practice. Doesn't happen overnight. I recently gave a seminar here in Phoenix, Arizona, called Body of Light, which I'm going to actually teach in England in March of 2012. And the whole weekend was, I made the statement, no judgment. It crept up into everything for everybody, judgment. So it does take practice. It does take practice. So it just is an experience. It just, we're just having experiences. If we can get to that place, then we could love unconditionally. But we are conditioned. We do have those, like I was saying earlier, we have those conditions, and everything is very familiar to us. So, you know, gossiping and all of that stuff is very familiar because our parents may have done it, so we just follow in our parents' footprints, and then, you know, everybody seems to do it, so why not jump on that bandwagon? But it's really shifting our consciousness around. And I have a theory. When I teach, I have people criticize or gossip about other people in their lives because it's a great tool to see where we need our own healing. So all the imperfections that we can find in other people are a clue of what we need in our own self to heal. Otherwise, they wouldn't be present in our consciousness.
Indeed, yeah. Well, we are quickly getting to the last few minutes of the program. I think I've touched upon quite a few things that one would find in your recent book. Is there anything that you would like to add that possibly I haven't brought up?
Well, I'd like to say my website, Paula Moran, MURAN.com, and you've done a great job of an overview of my work, and I thank you so much for that. And I'll be in England in November, I think I mentioned that, and I think that you've done great. I do travel. I have been traveling, but now my last tour was in the Yucatan. I finished 15 years of traveling, ended it in the Yucatan, and now I'll be in Europe more and traveling in being back to England a couple times in the next year or so, teaching and doing some private sessions. So I'll be available there. So I think you've done a fabulous job.
All right, thanks. I see you're well-traveled as well. I was looking at your list of healing retreats, and I was intrigued by the fact that you seem to like your trips to Egypt.
Oh, yes, yes. That was Egypt. I'm so glad we went to Egypt when we did, because now it's so hard to get into Egypt. But the last trip to Egypt, we went to the Western Desert, which no white girls go to. And so it was such a great experience. Instead of doing a Nile cruise, we went to the Western Desert and to the oases. And ancient Egypt is there. It's untouched, no tourists. It was absolutely pristine. It was so beautiful. Oh, it was great. And we had private time in the Great Pyramid, which was also fabulous. And then 6 months later, the whole economy and the whole government crashes down. So lots of change in that Mediterranean area, lots of change there.
Do you find in those areas that there's a very noticeable change in the energy, in the sense that when you're in a crowded city, there are so many energies moving around, it could even feel a little bit, I would think, overpowering. But when you get into these open areas, like you were talking about the Western Desert, do you notice there's a very different type of energy there?
Yes. Well, have you been to Egypt?
Yes, I have once, yes.
Yes, yeah, so you know, like going to all the temples up the Nile, there's so many people, so many tourists, and it's very hard to tap into that ancient energy that is so present there. It's very hard to get a little space where there's no people. So then when we went to the Western Desert, in the middle of absolutely nowhere, it was nobody wanted to leave. We just wanted to stay. We were the only ones in the hotel. Nonetheless, we were the only white girls there. And it was just an incredible opportunity to really feel ancient Egypt, really feel it underneath our feet. We wanted to stop the bus and just got out and started digging in the sand, because I could feel temples underneath my feet. And it was so present there. It was amazing experience.
Well, Paula, I'm going to have to thank you very much for coming onto the program. Time's gone so quickly, as it usually does when you're having fun, as the expression goes. Your experiences have been extremely interesting, and I think you're doing some wonderful work there. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for this opportunity. You have a good evening.
You're welcome. Right, friends, just to let you know quickly, my guest next week will be Sherry Cortland, who is an author, who has just written her second book, which has been published, called Raising Our Vibrations for the New Age. And it contains channeled information from two guide groups about how we can raise our vibrational levels, about 2012, the shifting consciousness that we're nearing at the end of this particular cycle, and also talks about Atlantean, Arcturian, and Pleiadian connections and how to overcome fear in order to expedite spiritual growth and, of course, much more. So thank you, friends, for being with me today. I hope you can make it next week. God bless you all. Thank you.